Get ready to get your nerd on.
Kick the week off right with games, gadgets, and general geekery from the ladies of the Electric Sisterhood.
On Tuesdays, get your pop culture news and reviews with a pure Bostonian perspective on the Boston Bastard Brigade.
Geek Aggro is coming at you on Wednesdays to fill what's left of your cerebral cortex with the hottest beats to get you on your feet.
Then on Thursdays, you have me, Phil the Issues Guy, presenting the Live Issues program.
It's going down each week. Only in the land of Ash, nerdcore at its finest.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnistry Inc. proudly present No Borders, No Race, The World's J-Pop and Alternative Hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your host, King Baby Duck. I want to start off the show by giving a big shout out to the ladies of Shonen Knife and the folks over at Good Caramel Records. It's been a real dream of mine to be able to meet and chat with this legendary rock band from Osaka, and last week it finally came true, and I hope all of you listened to it. You probably could tell, like, I was real nervous chatting with Naoko. I mean, it's fucking Shonen Knife, for Christ's sakes. They're real legends in the Japanese rock and punk world. And they were fantastic live. First off, some great opening sets from Sarah Lee and Petty Morals. Maybe sometime in the near future, you'll hear one of these bands on my show. But the Knife still got it, especially Naoko, who is probably now in her 50s, but has yet to lose a single step in her musical routine. And it was nice to hear a lot of the older tracks played along with stuff from their new album Overdrive, which I highly recommend you all check out. It's a very, very fun album. The sold-out crowd loved it. I mean, who wouldn't love watching a Japanese rock band play their hearts out while they sing about food and cats? And plus, I got to meet fellow Bostonian J-pop podcast host Tyler of Abstract Japan and Jiggy-san from Cerebral Pop's Shuffle Podcast. I mean, how cool is that? I think, you know, probably a massive collaborative show needs to happen between the three of us. Yeah, I think maybe we should probably do that. I should talk to them. It was a truly magical night with no faults whatsoever. Well, there is one, but I'll talk about it in our next segment. For now, let's start today's playlist. Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these albums and EPs from cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And in fact, we're going to start the show off with a track from Shonen Knife's new album, Overdrive. This one is called Fortune Cookie.
Thank you. される意識のディフェンス点を打つ今はっきり見える温情脳内世界にインナーフィールド現れる己の実像
Zazen Boys with Riff Man from their 2006 album Zazen Boys 3. The band just released a free live album on their website, so if you want to grab it, go to mukaishutoku.com. Actually, let me spell that for you because I doubt any of you out there know how to spell that. That's mukaishutoku.com. So, I mentioned before the musical break that there was a fault with last week's night of Shonen Knife Awesomeness. Now, nothing wrong with the show, mind you, nor the awesome Q&A at MIT curated by fellow Japanese aficionado Professor Ian Condrey. No, the fault I speak of revolves around a shocking discovery that I came across in front of the Middle East nightclub in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I'm talking about the shutting down of Hi-Fi Pizza and Subs. Alright, so some of you may be thinking, King, it's a pizza restaurant. There are hundreds of thousands of them all around the world. Why make a big fuss over its closure? Well, this restaurant, Hi-Fi Pizza and Subs, was sacred ground for both No Borders, No Race and Boston Bastard Brigade, and let me explain why. In 2008, I conducted my first two band interviews with Ketchup Mania and Detroit 7 at that year's Japan Night show at TT the Bears. When I first met up with Dave, one of the people running the sadly now defunct website Japan Files, he had asked where it would be best to conduct the Ketchup Mania interview. Now, my friend and translator for the night, Kenji, who went by the nickname Domingo, we were having trouble thinking of a good place to record, as it gets real noisy in the rock club fairly easily. So, we both shrugged our shoulders and suggested we go to that pizza joint right across the street. So, the three of us and Ketchup Mania go across the street to Hi-Fi Pizza and Subs and conduct this interview in front of a few people, one of whom was my fellow Pillows Fan Forum member, Christmas. Yes, that's her real name. And I placed down this massive cassette recorder, and the band, we start going back and forth, with Domingo translating as best as he can. Afterwards, Dave pulled me to the side, gave me some great advice on how to better myself at doing interviews, which I still remember to follow this very day, and we parted. And it worked out great. So we decided, hey, let's do the same with Detroit 7. And we did. And that interview went better and more relaxed. And the restaurant had a great setup and the tables were perfectly positioned to go one-on-one with the musicians front and center. Hence the name of our podcast show, One-on-One, because we were able to just be face-to-face with one another. Although maybe face-to-face would have been a better name for the podcast show, but odds are it's probably already taken. But anyways, months later, with this time my friend Pino acting as translator, we did an interview with Tsushima Mire, and also recorded some video of the interview for a failed pilot of a No Borders No Race TV show that never really materialized. Again, we did it at Hi-Fi Pizza, and it also went great. Plus, the owners were incredibly nice about us recording in there. That's probably something I should have mentioned earlier. Myself and Blonik, at the time, decided that if we ever did interviews with bands playing at either TT the Bears or at the Middle East, Hi-Fi Pizza would be the place to conduct it. Two episodes of One-on-One were recorded there. Our first with The Clicks and another with Electric Eel Shock, both of which can be found on our site with a little searching. It's because of these interviews, all of which were very important to me in regards to how I evolved as an interviewer and how it pushed B3 and No Borders No Race to be better entities, that made Hi-Fi Pizza and Subs important to me and to B3. And I'm heartbroken that it's gone, with no word on what will replace it in the future. I read somewhere that it's not going to be a restaurant, so there goes continuing our routine there. With that said, while the restaurant is gone, the memories and milestones that we made there will live on as I keep breathing. So, here's the deal. I mentioned these three original interviews, none of which have ever been heard outside of our WMWM era, which, considering it was college radio, may never have been heard at all. What I may do is unearth these interviews for all of you to hear sometime in the very near future. These interviews with Ketchup Mania, Detroit 7, and Tsushima Mire from 2008. They're not the best interviews I've ever conducted, but they will give you an idea on how far along we've come since the Boston Bash Brigade started. So, keep a lookout on our website, and hopefully you'll see and hear these rare one-on-one episodes be unearthed for the world to hear. Until then, to our playlist, we must return. Coming up next, we've got the band Swim Bear, who are all members of the British folk group The Broken Broadcast, playing different instruments. This is their debut single, which you can find on their Bandcamp. It's called Deep Dive. That you Sashimi with Japanese Girl in New York. That's from the I Love J-Rock compilation album. A funny thing, DJ Sashimi was working Shonen Knife's merch booth, and she told me that this is currently her only released song. So hopefully she'll make more music in the near future. A friend of mine told me about an anime series that I should watch a couple weeks ago called No Game, No Life, which can be viewed on Crunchyroll and Hulu, and has been licensed by Sentai Filmworks. Initially, I had saw previews of this series and thought it was going to be one of those fan-servicey kind of shows that would start off good, but then fall downhill ever so sloppily. And I'm so happy that I was wrong about my initial thoughts on No Game, No Life, because it's a really great series. Now, No Game, No Life follows a brother and sister named Sora and Shiro, who go by the name Blank in the online realm. One day, they are given a challenge by an unknown assailant, and soon after beating them, the siblings find themselves transported to a whole new world called Disbord. The transporter, as it turns out, was a boy named Tet, who is the god of this new world, and tells Sora and Shiro that they must be the key to bringing a new age to Disbord. Rather quickly, the duo known as Blank start winning matches and creating new allies, including Stephanie, the daughter to the former king of Elkia. Soon, Blank finds themselves the rulers of Elkia and proceed to create a plan to conquer the rest of the 15 worlds, thereby giving them the chance to challenge Tet to the title of One True God. So, before you jump into No Game, New Life, you should know that this series, or hopefully the first season, ends after 12 episodes and only shows 3 of the 16 kingdoms. That's probably the only disappointing thing I can say about the show. Okay, maybe the animation can be a little bit too bright, but perhaps that'll be fixed on the Blu-ray version. With that being said, No Game, No Life is a great show. It's funny, philosophical at times, and it's got some cool action sequences during some of the battle scenes. There's one episode that combines all three together where Blank battles Jibri, I think that's how you pronounce it, and she's like a member of a winged race known as the Flugel. Trust me, it's a very cool episode. The show can get pretty fanservice-y, which I was kind of expecting it to be from seeing some of the pics of the show, but it's a funny kind of fanservice. In one segment, Stephanie keeps challenging Sora and Shiro to matches, losing more and more every time, and each time she loses, she's put in a more embarrassing situation, to the point where the siblings make Stephanie act like a dog as she is dragged about town. It's not like a fetishy sort of thing, though. There's this rule where if you lose a match, you need to do whatever the winner says. So at this point, she nonchalantly begs, shakes, and sits like a dog would have commanded, with Stephanie getting pissed off at herself when she finds herself doing these silly things. It's really, really funny. Now, I don't want to spoil too much more of No Game, No Life, but I will say this. Go check it out. Again, it's on Crunchyroll and Hulu, with it hopefully coming out next year on Blu-ray from Sentai Filmworks. Right now, let's spin something from Bloodthirsty Butcher's Youth, which was released last year. This song is called Goth.
washed the blood off of his hands.
They began to shake and he had to ask,
what kind of boyfriend would do that?
Well, at least he felt a little bad.
They were young and out of luck,
and the taste of lust lingered on her tongue.
And I know who he was thinking of.
People do some crazy things for love, and they do it just because.
You can never get enough.
He's a knife and it moves through slowly. Cuts through his canvas, then through him. Well, the reader's wife was a woman of meaning, but even a stronger subject to pain.
She didn't cry, that's what he said.
Rusty scissors to the head.
Sometimes you can never tell
how shitty someone may have felt.
And all his friends couldn't comprehend
such a happy song with an ugly end.
And she was scared it didn't show.
Well, people do some twisted things, you know. Do it just to show.
You can never let it go.
He's precious and it moves through slowly. Cut through his canvas and through him. Well, the painter's wife was a woman of meaning, but even the stars are subject to blame.
A new track from our friends As the Sparrow, that was The Painter's Wife, and you can download that one for free on their official Bandcamp page. For those in the Boston area, you can check out As the Sparrow at the Lizard Lounge in Cambridge on October 24th. I have a problem with cowards in the media, specifically those who review things and give too much praise for works that should be best forgotten. I bring this up because a couple weeks ago, I reviewed the new U2 album, Songs of Innocence, and I gave it 1.5 out of 5 stars. Now, I'm a big U2 fan. I own a good chunk of their albums, and I saw them live in Boston during their Vertigo tour many years ago. But as a reviewer, I need to take that fanboyish mentality and toss it out the window so I can give a credible opinion. And their new album was, to put it bluntly, shit. And a lot of reviewers felt the same way. NME, Pitchfork, Exclaim, Drowned in Sound all took a real disliking to this album. Now, there are others who gave more favorable reviews, like 3.5 and 4-starred ones, from the likes of The Boston Globe and Spin Magazine. And I can respect the opinions of these people because while they might have liked it, they don't call it perfect. And it's okay if you like the album so long as if you can, like, admit its flaws. I liked the Black Keys' recent album Turn Blue, but I thought a good chunk of the songs sounded too familiar to one another. Hence why I gave it a 3.5 out of 5-star review. But when a reviewer gives a perfect score to something that isn't perfect, it pisses me off. And guess which magazine did that? That's right. Rolling Stone. I make it no surprise to anyone that I subscribe to them, as I like their political articles and Peter Travers's movie reviews, but when it comes to Rolling Stone's taste in actual music, it comes off as really biased. They practically give the likes of Bob Dylan, U2, and Bruce Springsteen 5-star reviews because they see them as their rock gods, and they must appease to their gods and give them whatever they want or fear feeling their wrath. And no one really says anything about it because, oh, it's Rolling Stone, the king of all music opinions. They must totally be right. No, that's not how it works. If I were to write review after review of a specific artist's work and always give them 5 stars across the board, I'd be seen as a joke. But it's because they're Rolling Stone, they can get away with it. And that mentality needs to be put to an end and needs to be taken out behind the barn and shot. So, to Rolling Stone, I urge you to please stop polishing turds. You're just making more of a mess than is needed, and your opinions are really starting to smell up the place. Go retake a couple of journalism courses and learn how to review music again. Otherwise, no one is going to take you guys seriously. And you need to be taken seriously if you're writing some great pieces about the government and crimes against humanity, but those articles will be pushed aside because you can't do what you were supposed to do in the first place: write and review music. Learn to do that again, and you'll bring things back to order. Also, separate yourself from US Weekly. Or is it Us Weekly? I don't know. When I heard about you guys being owned by the same people as Us Weekly, I lost a little bit more respect for you. I mean, that's just not right in my opinion. But let's stop this little Kanye West-like rant there before I get into real trouble and get back to the music. Let's spin something new from Avengers and Sci-Fi. This comes from Unknown Tokyo Blues, which was released this past June. They call it Citizen Song.
Down. して握手しようアイコン脱いで見してよバージョンアップしてパーティーしよう
Addicted Boys School, that was Freak Show from their Innocent Sorrow single. While the band is on hiatus, frontman TM Revolution has been busy collaborating with fellow J-pop artist Nana Mizuki on a few singles. As I promised when reviewing Frank, I'm going to cover a lot more indie films on this show. And over a decade ago, I heard about director Richard Linklater making a movie that would take 11 years to film, as he wanted to gather the same cast for a few weeks each year to tell the story of a family over the course of a childhood. The end result of this massive project was Boyhood, a movie that showcases growing up in a new, unique way. The main focus of the film is Mason, a young boy whose parents are divorced, and he and his sister Samantha go through the changes that every kid goes through. The mother, played by Patricia Arquette, marries, divorces, meets someone new, and breaks up with them as well throughout these 12 years. The father, played by Ethan Hawke, tries to be the cool dad in this film, but also realizes that he too needs to grow up to set an example for his kids. Now, Boyhood is one of those films that should be really easy to explain. I mean, it's about a kid growing up from age 6 to 18, ending with him going to college. But there's so much more to this film than this. It's about the struggles that every family goes through, but there are things in here that some families thankfully don't have to put up with. Things like abusive and alcoholic stepfathers and stressful breakups. And it's an amazing accomplishment to put so much realism into a film, especially with the fact that these actors age as the film's story goes on. And that's why Boyhood succeeds as both a film and as a work of art. It's a fictional movie that looks and feels real. It's not often you can make a film like this. Granted, there are documentaries that follow people for many years, but it's easier to make a documentary over the course of a decade than a fictional visual work. Linklater is like one of my favorite directors, with works like Dazed and Confused, School of Rock, Bernie, and the Before Trilogy standing as some of the best films of the last 25 years. And Boyhood shows Linklater at the top of his game, and I think it's going to be a really long time before another film like this is even attempted. If you want to see a movie that is worth your time and money, and if it's playing at your local theater, please go and see Boyhood. It's a really great film, and I wouldn't be too surprised if it walks away with a bunch of awards at the end of the year. Why do I have the feeling I said the same thing about Calvary? I might have said the same exact same thing when I saw Calvary. So if it sounds like I'm repeating myself from past reviews, I do apologize. I think next time, the next indie film I'm going to review, if it's on demand, I'm going to try to see the Nick Cave film 20,000 Days on Earth. But if it's not on demand, I might bite my tongue and watch the first volume of Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac. I might suffer through that one. Be warned. But why don't we go back to some music right now? It was a sad day when Dave Brocky, better known as Odorous Urungus from GWAR, passed away early this year. But it still warms my heart that the murder and mayhem will continue with their two new vocalists, Blothar and Volvatron. To honor this occasion, I'm going to spin a track from my favorite GWAR album, Beyond Hell. And this little sing-along ditty is called Murderer's Muse.
If this evil force can be stopped and destroyed before actual nuclear war begins, then the universe will be safe.
Drop to Earth City.
Those creatures that rule the universe.
Killing every human in their path.
Across the dead sky gleaming! He was nailed to the flaming cross!
Cornelius with Perfect Rainbow from his debut album, The First Question Award. A far cry from his now more experimental rock that we're used to hearing from him. And yes, it was a weird transition to go from Gwar to Cornelius, but that's our podcast for you. We spin great music of all genres, and we'll order them any way we want. And that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, song requests, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, or if you have any questions for our friend Sawa Sensei, you can write to us at thebastards@boston-brigade.com. You can follow me on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com and on Twitter at king_baby_duck. Like us at facebook.com/boston-brigade, and don't forget about the other shows under the Land of Ash, including Electric Sisterhood, Geek Aggro, in the Issues program. Now, I want to do a little bit of a plug because our friend Sawa Sensei has a band called The Death March, and they're kind of related to the video game The World Ends With You. They just released an album on iTunes. Go out and buy it. A lot of great songs. I'm not just saying that because she's my friend. I'm saying it because it is the absolute truth. We're going to end things off today with a track from Noodles. This comes to us from their 2012 Funtime album, and it's called Perfect Day. And until next time, this is King Davy Duck reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
I can't talk anymore.
What's up?